This is the second in a series of three classes that I'm doing for winter program on lifestyle changes and choices. Before I get into the content of today, I guess like a good teacher, I want to check in on you about your homework assignment. I suggested a couple to you, and wondering if it was possible for any of you to accomplish either one. One of them was for you to spend some time listening to one tape in the tape library that has been of interest to you or that you think might speak to some change that's going on in your life. I'm wondering if anybody had a chance to do that. You two did?
I listened to two tapes, but not in conjunction with your assignment.
Okay. Which were they?
Mary and John Schramm together in Lifestyle 1 and 2.
Okay. Those are good ones. Somebody else? Sandy?
I listened to Enough is Enough by John.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to the second one. I started the first one and said we're going to talk about theological and biblical stuff. And then the second part we'll talk about the practical aspects, so I skipped it.
Okay. Anybody else listen to a tape?
I re-listened to part of this again. I have read the original sessions, you know, but listened to some of that.
Okay.
I listened to some tapes on vocation and ministry. Why Bluehost?
Was it helpful?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Karen, you listened to something?
Yeah, mainly in terms of personal changes.
Mm-hmm.
And women and how they relate. I've listened to about 10 tapes since I've been sick. They've all been on that kind of issue.
Good. Anybody else?
I didn't listen to it just this weekend, but I listened not very long ago to Mary Schramm's Saints, which was very interesting.
Uh-huh. I would suggest that for those of you that haven't had a chance to do it, that you do it before our session on Thursday, that you go and find a tape that speaks to some change that's coming up for you and listen to what other people have to say about it. And the reason that I would like you to do it is because I think when we make change, we need to find ways to motivate ourselves, and we can find internal motivation, but external motivation, I think, is everywhere around us, and it's for good or for bad. In our culture, there are so many people who are trying to motivate us to do things that perhaps we don't want to do, to build our castles on sand, so to speak, that Holden is a beautiful place to find people and ideas and books, writings that have things to say to us that really can touch at the core of us and have some very basic fundamental pieces of wisdom. And just to counteract all the cultural stuff, I think it'd be real important to listen here and find those external or outside motivators, those people who can really give us some words. And they often have pictures for us about what change could be like. And it's often real important to rely or depend in some ways on other people's good ideas, not just have to figure it out all ourselves. So please listen to a tape. Or if you're the kind of person who finds tape listening too very difficult, then read something. But I think the tapes are real quick, easy shot at that. Now, the other part of the assignment was if you could work it out to spend 10 minutes experiencing and expressing an emotion, ideally with somebody else. Was anybody able to do that?
It took longer than 10 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, and it wasn't, I didn't have to ask this person, it just happened.
Good. Can you just tell us what kind of emotion it was, or was it a mixture?
It was a grief over a loss.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anybody else? Susan?
Yeah, mine was anger. Over a loss.
Mm-hmm. Did you do that alone or with someone else?
With someone else.
Okay. Anybody else have the chance?
I
sadness over change. Hmm.
Did you do that by yourself or with someone else?
With someone.
Okay. June?
I don't know what emotion it was. It was many, I guess. Fear and anger and sadness.
Mm-hmm. Could be. Well, is that alone or with another?
No.
With another? Okay. All right. Anybody take the time to do that by yourself? Without anyone else?
Yeah.
Both.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay. All right. Well, I just encourage you to keep at that one too. As we think about change, feelings come up, and if we can practice finding a way to release those feelings, particularly with someone else, so we don't feel isolated, even if it's only 10 minutes, or we may find it's longer, the more we can incorporate that into our lives, I think the better our changes are going to be and the smoother they're going to go. So I'll ask you again on Thursday.
Judy?
Yeah.
Just a question on that. I think this question comes out of, is there a place where you get so, where that feeds upon thinking so much about your needs and problems that you don't finally let go of it? Is there a place where sometimes you then have to let go and to find it? I think I'm thinking more, this made me think of it, but I worked on a, I guess you call it one of these hotlines where people could call and complain for hours a day and so on. And you had these people who became perpetual, mm-hmm. you know, that just would never face up to anything, but just always wanted somebody to hear this and never really tried to take any steps or anything. And it made me think of that maybe that's a bit of a danger in one way, or we have to have a balance there. Mm-hmm. That
I think we do. I think that probably the people you were listening to were what I would call stuck in one yeah. particular kind of thing. I would guess that most of us take so little time to share our feelings with other people that we probably could go a long way down that road before we became sort of mired in something. I also think that probably that miring has to do with that there are other feelings a person isn't getting to. They may be crying and being sad, and they're not moving on to the anger that might be underneath that or the fear that might be underneath that. And in that case, you need help. It's very important to have another person to do it with who can think with you about that. I think in general, though, most of us don't take enough time to just let something out. Yeah. Does that answer it at all?
Yeah, I guess I was just bringing it up as,
yeah.
as one of the things I think we'd be conscious
yeah.
of too.
Mm-hmm. Occasion. Yeah, you just wish they'd get off it and get on to something else.
And a second, we call it observation, but is that I think too we have to recognize and remember that just like we all are very different in other ways, that we can be different in this way too. For instance, I sometimes think that for myself, it's as beneficial as a word to use, to express the feelings and work through it and get them out by myself as it is with another person, not necessarily all the time. Mm-hmm. But I think for another person, that might be very different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just as we vary personality-wise, so we vary in this kind of mm-hmm. thing.
I think that's true. And I know for me that there are some things that I do better at if I release those feelings by myself. And other things I do better if I have someone else who's a friend, and other things I do better if I have someone else who I don't even know, who's an objective, like, counselor type person. So I think there is a combination. I think you're right about that. Other reactions, thoughts about that? Okay. I'd like to review what we did last Friday in our first session and then get on with what we're going to do today. What I'm talking about in these three sessions are what I consider to be the fundamentals of change. First thing would be that we need to acknowledge the need for change. Something happens that we know that change has to occur. And we talked about three circumstances in which that might happen. That circumstances beyond our control may change, and therefore we have to adjust to that. And that can be a death in our family, an illness of our own, a sudden termination of our employment, someone else changing in their lives that affect us, so we must change, that kind of situation beyond our control or outside of ourselves. And we know change is needed. Another way we know change is needed is needs dissatisfaction. That personal sense that we have that something's not right, that we're feeling continually discontent or restless, that we've got more to do, but we don't know what it is. We can't put our finger on it. It itches at us. It kind of gnaws at us. It knocks at us. Mary Schramm, Elizabeth O'Connor would talk about those as gifts, that it, we're not acting on those abilities, talents that have been given to us, but we're not going with them. And as a result, we're continually feeling dissatisfied. It pushes us to change. And then the third area, which you've been talking about, I think, quite a bit in Winter Program, is the concern for the world. All of us share that in common. We all have compassionate response to the pain and suffering of the world. When conditions are right, we can act on those. We live in a society which doesn't help us do that very well. But when conditions are right, we have those responses. When you've talked about manna culture, manna society, manna lifestyle, that's a sense that there needs to be change, more justice, more equality, more sharing. Same with peacemaking, that peacemaking can become a lifestyle, and it means that we change our lives when we move toward making peace. So, all of that has to do with the knowledge that we need to change. I also spent some time talking last time about the amount of feeling that can surface as we begin to recognize those changes and act on them. And that's where that homework assignment came out of. Now today we're going to talk about the second fundamental or principle of change, which is development of a vision of the change. That we need to have a picture of what we're changing toward in order to sustain the change. And the third principle of change is that we need to take small steps toward that vision once we know what it is, and that's what we'll talk about on Thursday. And the key word in there is small. I think when we make change in our lives, we assume it's going to feel like jumping off a cliff. And usually it's more like stepping off a curb. It's small. That's how we keep it going. So that will be our discussion on Thursday. But at any rate, today we're going to talk about vision. I'm going to present some stuff to you, and then I think we're going to do some practicing in a small way. Creating vision. I told myself I'm going to read, really pay attention to my notes this time, because I wrote down everything I wanted to tell you, and I know I'll regret it if I don't, so that's why I'm pausing sometimes to look at my notes and make sure I'm where I want to be. Before I define visions, I want to propose or suggest that we all have visions. We all have visions all the time. We just don't recognize them as such. But we use pictures in our memory to motivate us, to keep us moving, to bolster our self-confidence, to remind us that we don't need to despair. We do it in very small ways. Perhaps you maybe have done this once, where you've had a new article of clothing that you've quite liked, and you've put it on and you've imagined yourself going into the dining room or somewhere else where there are other people and imagining what that will be like when you have your new article of clothing on. What people will think and what they might say and how you would look. Wow, that's pretty exciting. And sometimes you might have done that in your life, okay? That's a kind of a vision. We have a picture. It moves us. I think we can have bigger ones than that, even. I tend to be a pretty good daydreamer, and I used to think that was an unfortunate quality of mine, and that I could spend a considerable amount of time picturing something else than where I was. Now, in the last couple years, I've really come to value that ability in myself. I'm making some career changes, and some of that has to do with the aid I've found my daydreams to be to me in that. For instance, I can now spend a considerable amount of time picturing an ideal garden. And I want to move in the direction of being a gardener or a nursery person or a landscaper or something like that. And I can spend a considerable amount of time picturing our backyard. And I can remember everything, I can remember everything that's in that backyard. And then I can picture what I'm going to do next, what I'm going to plant next, how I might move that bush from one part of the yard to the other part. I can imagine what it would look like without the fence around it. I can even go so far as to imagine what would happen if we move the garage back a little bit and then we have more space and we could do a little more. And then I can really get going and I can picture the neighborhood and the whole block. And what would happen if we all decided to put, what if we just did a row of impatience or alyssum all the way down the sidewalk? I mean, we all did that. I can picture that, and I can get going with that, what that would look like, and how I would talk to people about it, and what we would do, and where we'd find the plants. Okay? And what I found is that I've become more honoring of that ability in me, and I've taken more time to be deliberate about it. And there have been times here at Holden where I have missed a session in the evening where something's been scheduled here because I knew it was time to daydream. And I've gone up to the house when I knew no one was going to be there, got down, sat down on the couch, sat back and said, okay, go ahead, picture that. And I started to go. I feel so refreshed, so revived, so rejuvenated after I've done that. So that I would call that making a vision. And some people do it in other ways. In fact, lots of people do it. I'd like to give you some more encouragement around this. John V. Taylor has written the book Enough is Enough, A Biblical Call to Moderation in a Consumer-Oriented Society. He spends the first two chapters of the book discussing the knowledge for the need of change. He talks about what's happening in our world as we continue to be so consumptive, so exploitive. What are we doing to the planet and ourselves? And his third chapter is about vision. After he's talked about the need for change, he talks about what is the vision. The chapter's entitled The Theology Enough, and he begins it with what he calls the dream of shalom, a dream of vision. He says, a culture is an outward expression of the dreams by which humans live. Culture is the embodiment of our dreams. And then he refers to the play Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoder. Remember that musical? Joseph in that play sang, any dream will do, but he was mistaken. The content of the dream makes all the difference. In the Bible, it is the Hebrew dream that matters. In practice, their two little kingdoms fell far short of the ideal, yet the ideal lived on as a dream, not only in the visions of the prophets, but in the value judgments of ordinary people, and no doubt in the daily behavior, too. Their dream was summed up in the word shalom, something much broader than peace, the harmony of a caring community informed at every point by its awareness of God. And in that definition, the kernel of shalom's meaning is in the phrase, at every point. And I think that's what our visions do for us, our dreams. They're there at every point as we make a change, as we step off a curb. What does this say in terms of my vision? Is this the step I want to make? like to define vision. I'm using Jan Bodine's definition in her book, Here's Hoping, Coping with Nuclear Despair. Let me see if I can find it. She calls visions the imagined pictures of realities positive potential. The imagined picture of reality's positive potential. That is that picture we can create in our mind of what our reality could be in a better way. Nothing too mysterious about that. Martin Luther King had a dream. He motivated people by that dream. It wasn't considered strange that he had it. It was considered wonderful that he had it. You're going to be reading The Color Purple. Are you going to be reading The Color Purple?
Yes.
Okay. Read The Color Purple. Seeley is a major character in it. She has suffered incredibly negative relationship experiences. And she meets Shug, and she learns that there can be other kinds of relationships, and she begins to dream about what's possible in relationships. And then things happen that I won't tell you about. But she learns to have vision. She never had it till she met Shug. In Congregational Lifestyle Change for the Lean Years, here's a book put out by the Presbyterian Hunger Program for institutional change. How do you get an institution to change? They spend their first chapters talking about why institutions need to change, why churches need to change, and then he moves on to the images, and he starts talking about imaging, dreams, visions. He says, what would it be like if we really believed in stewardship? What would it be to be good stewards? And he pictures what that would look like for a congregation to be good stewards. We understand the power of being able to picture things. And in the Covenant Group for Lifestyle Assessment, done by the same group, they have a chart in the back of the book, Dynamics of Lifestyle Change, and they have columns about what do we have to do now because of our knowledge of the need for change. The world needs to change, we need to change. And then what ought we to do? What would even be better on top of what needs to happen? What ought we to do? And then what would we want to do if we could have it all? And the second thing they have, with motivators and all kinds of things, they have the visions. They know too, you have to have a vision. And they say we have to have a sustainable society, a society of sustainable sufficiency. We ought, on top of that, to have a just society where there's fairness, real equality, real sharing. And then if we could have it all, we'd want us to live in a global community. They have a picture of where they want to go. So, do I need to do much more convincing of you that visions are important parts of change? Bodine writes this in her book. She says, visions are, it must be said, quite complicated. They involve both the logical and the illogical, the sensical and the nonsensical, the controllable and the uncontrollable. Though they begin in a second, completed visions take time, process, and deliberation. Visions begin with the forming of a mental image or images. And anyone who would be a visionary must, therefore, use their imagination. And what I would like us to do today is begin to learn how to use our imaginations. I think in our society, we sometimes don't want to either admit that we do it, or we tell ourselves not to use our imaginations. And there are a couple of things I realized are sort of societal prohibitions about it. One is that we believe that visions relate to the supernatural, psychic phenomena, something beyond us. And I would say, yes, they do. What's wrong with that? You know, the supernatural or the psychic phenomena or whatever we call that is a part of us. It's all that's around us. And that we, if we only rely on our rationality, on what's logical, on what we know, as we look with these two eyes instead of also looking with that third and middle eye, we're missing it. So I would say, yes, it is part of that wonderful other part of being human. And let's embrace it a little more than we have. We also can get real critical. It's amazing how we can get real evaluative about whether people have good imaginations or bad imaginations. You know, what? You know, some people have a terrific, well, and if you begin to get real excited about something and you go on and on and on, they say, well, you really have a good imagination, and you know, what are they saying? You know, you're letting your imagination run away with you, go a little wild or so on. Or someone who can't imagine the details of something, we kind of go, well, they have a bad imagination. What's wrong with them? Not too creative, you know. We get evaluative about this. And I don't think we need to. I think we need to recognize that it is an ability we all have, that we all do it in little pieces here and there. And that it's a natural part of our lives. But it's like learning anything, learning tennis, learning how to knit, whatever. We learn the rudiments of it. And some of us will always know how to do it then from time to time, and others of us will embrace it with great passion and use it as a real fundamental part of our lives. I think we should just use it whenever we need to. Simontons, the people in Texas who've been working in cancer treatment, have been using visualization, mental imagery, as treatment in cancer. And they say a couple of things about this. In their book, Getting Well Again, they say, relaxation and mental imagery are among the most valuable tools we have found to help patients learn to believe in their ability to recover from cancer. We have discovered that mental imagery is not only an effective motivational tool for recovering health, but it is also an important tool for self-discovery and for making creative change in other areas of life. They say by forming an image, a person makes a clear mental statement of what he or she wants to happen. And by repeating the statement, he or she soon becomes to expect the desired event will occur. And as a result of this positive expectation, the person begins to act in ways consistent with achieving the desired result, and in reality helps to bring it about. Simply put, one might say that one learns to become empowered by one's imagination. Today we'll practice some of the techniques. There are aids to helping ourselves imagine better, daydream better, dream better, and so on. Journal keeping of dreams is a helpful way. I think our dreams at night in our sleep are very helpful. I had a dream about two and a half years ago, maybe, about getting married, and was quite vivid. I can remember it. This was before Ray and I got married. I even talked about it. I can remember the dream very vividly. It was as if I had lived it. And when I woke up, I asked myself, what was that feeling? What I felt something. What was that? What was it? And it suddenly dawned on me that was happiness. I felt what was pure happiness. And I had realized in my life I had never allowed myself to either experience pure happiness or know there was such a thing. And for me, that had become a vision, that was possible. I had felt it once. I knew what it was. I'd felt it in my dream, but nevertheless, I had felt it. So for me, that is always out there as a possibility. Now, that's a sleep dream. But I think we can encourage our dreaming. And Emily White has some nice tapes in here on dreams. She's a Jungian therapist, so you might want to listen to those. Meditation, learning how to meditate, can also help us become more relaxed, and I think can make our memory or our visions more vivid, as fasting can do that as well. And I don't mean the fasting that goes on so long that we begin to have hallucinations, but just that shorter fasting that makes us feel a little more alert. I think that can aid in our envisioning process. Our faith is an important part of our envisioning. I think if we have faith, on top of knowing the techniques, we have an extra push, because we can call on our belief in the divine, we can call on our belief in powers greater than ourselves to help us in creating the visions. And by that, we can ask for guidance, we can ask for vividness, we can ask for endurance, direction, and to just be with us as a reassuring presence. So very often it would help, I think, when we're going to deliberately envision things, to pray before we begin, when we're finished. So I'd like to do a couple of exercises now, and I'd like to begin with a prayer. So let us pray. Dear God, we call upon you today as we exercise the imaginations you have generously given us. You, who have more strength, more endurance, more memory, and more knowledge than we, please tap our memories and sharpen our sights as we create our pictures of ourselves and the world and our future in it. Amen. I'd like us to do an exercise, and I'd like you to, it's going to take us about 10 to 15 minutes, and it's important that you're physically comfortable and also that you're not doing something else. So if you're going to join us, you might want to put down the things you have in your hands, and if you're sitting on the wrong side of the room, get up and get on the other side, or if your chair is uncomfortable, adjust yourself. If you're cold, get warmed up, or whatever you need to do to make yourself comfortable, because we're going to go into our minds a little bit. Well, I don't know if you just find yourself, the glare is bothering me, or, you know, something, I don't know. I want a different view, whatever it might be. But get yourself comfortable. Putting your feet up feels good. Do that. But give yourself room. We're going to do, this time we're going to go back into our memories, and in the second exercise we're going to go ahead into the future. I want you to, I think we could exercise a little bit here, and maybe move our necks back and forth to the left and to the right slowly, and then move our head back, move our chin up, and then around, and drop our heads onto our chest. Do that again, go around real slowly. Breathe in as we go back. Exhale as we come forward. Now reverse it and go back the other direction. Inhale. And exhale. And then take our arms and just reach up and push. Feel all that space around us. And maybe we'll yawn a little bit if we need to. Oh, doesn't that feel good? Stretch out that spine, get that nerve center working. Oh, crap. You can get good at that. Okay, now sit back. Get in the position that feels most relaxing to you. And close your eyes. You may hear noises from time to time, but don't worry about it. People are just doing, they're going about their business. I want you to think of sometimes, a few times in your life, where something important or something good happened because of you.
Because of
you. Because of a choice that you made, because of something you said or you did, or because of the way you were at that particular moment. Think of a few of those times. Just let them run through your mind for a few minutes. Now I'd like you to choose one of those times. Keep your eyes closed and find one of those times and focus on that particular time. And what I would like you to do, like in a movie, I'd like you to replay the scene for yourself. How did it begin? What was going on? Who was there? Where were you? What did you do? How did it end? I'll give you about 3 to 5 minutes to really run that whole thing through. It helps to keep your eyes open. To that, that's better for you. Go ahead and do that. Picture, take one of those moments in time where something good or important happened to you.
Because
of you. I'm sorry. And replay it.
Something good happened to ourselves?
No, something good happened because of you. Sorry. When you think about your actions, your presence in that scene, what was it that you were tapping into? What made you do what you did? Try to see if you can figure that out. What made you be how you were right then? Now stop the scene if you can, kind of leave it at the end where it was, and come back to us. Open your eyes and look around when you're ready. Some of our memories may have been vivid, and some of them may have been vague, or some of the things we remembered might have seemed very powerful, or some of them might have seemed small. I would like us, though, to take some time to share the particular story that we focused on with each other in small groups for about, I don't know, 10 minutes at most. Today we're going to talk about taking the small steps, that is, acting out our vision, beginning to move so that the vision can be fulfilled. Before we do that, I want to check in again about homework. I asked you a couple of times now to listen to a tape or more tapes or read an article or something that would provide you some sort of external stimulus or motivation or example that would be interesting to you because of where your life is right now. Would anybody have time to do that between Tuesday and today? What did you listen to?
I listened to a tape of Walter Wandgren 2 years ago, I think it was, In the Arms of God.
Is that something that you wanted to
hear? There is a series. I want to listen to the rest of them. I think there are 4. Maybe 5. He was here for 2 weeks, I think, and had a session.
And did what he say have to say touch your life?
Pretty personal,
somewhere?
Yeah.
Okay. Someone else? Have a chance? Carolyn?
I was listening to a very interesting one.
Emily White's on Dreams?
Yeah.
Okay.
topic yesterday on vision. And so on the third part of that, too, I read that third chapter also in Jim's early book there, or not really, but it's imagination.
Good.
And that opened up a whole new thing of thinking about thinking in those terms in relationship to the peacemaking issue.
Yeah.
Her approach to that was very interesting, too, how it was her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's her underpinning of the book.
Judy, I read this morning part of the chapter, one of which we are, or two of which we are not going to study in Politics of Jesus. We're going to skip them.
Mm-hmm.
About the subjugation or the subordination, I think it said, of women and slaves, and it gives you a different idea about how to interpret Paul's writings.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to do more studying on it, but it was interesting.
Mm-hmm. Can people hear, Linda? Could you hear what she said? Barely. Okay.
Well, all I can say is publicly, I guess, read the chapters in Politics of Jesus that we are skipping. There are two of them, and we're going to 11, I think, today, for a kind of an interpretation of Paul's writing about the subjugation of slaves and women in the early church in the early times.
Which chapters are those that you're skipping?
9 and 10, I guess.
I would suggest, too, just spinning off from that, Linda, that we did, when we talked about imagination, using our imagination to create vision, using our dreams, using our daydreams, and so on, that we all have different slants on reality because of perhaps our place in society, the oppression we have suffered, and so on. So that our perspectives on what we create in our visions comes out of some of that background too.
That's right.
Other tapes or readings that you did that were helpful? Did you have one, or are you just looking at me?
No, I did it before.
Okay. Okay, what about the other part of the homework? This is, you know, this is the real teacher who's kind of being on you and making, checking up and doing all those things that help keep us moving. Did anybody take time to spend 10 minutes experiencing and expressing a feeling, sustaining a feeling with someone else? Remember the assignment.
Yeah.
For those, yes. Well, no. But for some who didn't, yeah, they wanted to encourage that.
I did.
Did you?
What am I supposed to tell about?
I think I just asked what feeling it was.
I guess it was anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Did you do that with someone else?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Great. The two homework assignments are real intentional. One is that I think in order to make change, we try very hard to internally motivate ourselves, and it's very helpful to use external motivators to keep us going. And by external motivators, I mean those ideas, those people, books, anything that's outside of us that holds up examples for us about the future or about other people's ideas about what things could be. We often call those people mentors or role models or people who have been there before us who have an idea. I've spent in the last couple of months a great deal of time with Lorraine Dunn before she left, because she was somebody who spent 20 years of her life working in a plant nursery. And that's something that's of interest to me. And so we would sit down and she would tell me things, and I felt like a little dried up plant. Then every word she would say was water going over my leaves, and I would just drink this information in. And it was very important for me to hear what she had to say about that, that she was a person who had been there before and they needed that example. So that's why, and the power that I received from hearing from her was kind of fuel. You know, I needed that to get going and to dream my dreams. So I'd say the same thing to you. Those people who do that for you, seek them out. And the same thing with expressing feeling. When we make change, we are bound to disrupt our equilibrium. And that includes the feelings that are inside of us that we hold. If we don't have a way to express those in some kind of supportive, routine way, then we sometimes block ourselves from making the changes we need. So if we can find ways that we can ask for help for 10 minutes of somebody's time, for a half an hour of somebody's time, to listen to us feel a feeling, express a feeling without anybody solving our problem, I think we'll have built into our lives something that will be valuable forever. So that's why I encourage you to find ways to do that. Okay.
Do you think that it's something we can know ourselves to differentiate between the daydreaming that is the what we're speaking of now, the visioning of something, mm-hmm. and the daydreaming that can be an escapism and the refusal to face a situation?
Mm-hmm.
Is that something we can really know, but we can know within ourselves whether we're viewing in one way? Or is there some, or is that something one must be aware of, that there's a possibility of dream becoming an escapism?
I think any daydream or imagining time can be practiced, because the skill is the same, the activity is the same. It's creating a mental picture. I think I'm talking about deliberately using those abilities to create visions of the future. And by vision, I mean that imagined pictures of reality's positive potential. So I'm talking about being intentional about it. Yeah. Okay. I want to remind us about what we're doing, too, since this is our last time. Lifestyle is what we're talking about, and that is the reflection of those characteristic patterns of behavior and those roles that we take on that in essence describe our life. And the lifestyle also reflects our vision of who we are, of our view of the world, of our story, meaning our history, our background, our values, and our own sense of worth. Some of those patterns that we have as part of our lifestyles, we hold in common with other people. And they may become so common that they become a part of our community or our culture. And culture, some people say, reflects the lifestyles of the people, the values of the people who live within it. In other words, they become institutionalized. They're the way things are. And I just point that out because I think that reflects a bit of the weight of the responsibility for being intentional about our lives. Because if our patterns can become institutionalized and become a part of the culture, the way Americans are, the way Holdenites are, then I think it makes us a little more thoughtful about the choices we make, because they can become a part of all of us. Well, as I started out, I got to tell you a little anecdote. It has nothing to do with hardly anything except that it is a part of the knowledge for the need for change when circumstances beyond your control hit your life. I was talking to a mother of one of Anya's friends about 3 weeks ago. I called her up long distance to see if Anya's friend could come and visit. And I was talking to the mother, and she was very enthusiastic about us being out in Washington State because her cousin had, I don't know how many months ago, it wasn't long ago, had just won the Washington lottery and had won $1.5 million. Now, talk about circumstances suddenly changing your life. And I said, well, what did she do with the money? You know the first two things she did with the money? She sent her parents on a Caribbean cruise, and she had surgery to pin her ears back. Now, what would you do if you had $1.5 million? She made a real important change in her life, whatever meaning that held for her. But what does that say about the culture, about the patterns that we hold up for ourselves is dictating what we want to do when we have the possibilities. So that's just a thought. Okay, we're going to talk about the third portion, taking small steps toward the vision. And as I mentioned last time, small is the key word there. I think that sometimes when we make change, it feels like we're jumping off a cliff. But in reality, if we look at it from the outside, it looks like we're stepping off a curb. It's like the next thing we're doing. Sometimes it feels very weighty, but often it's a very ordinary thing that we're doing. I thought about giving us a long kind of presentation about why this action is necessary and why we need to take small steps and give us a little research and whatnot, and I go on and on and on, and I realized that I was doing exactly what it is the problem with this step, that is avoiding taking it. It's going to talk about taking it instead of taking it. So what I want us to do today is work, just like we did in elementary school and junior high when we had homework in class and we sat there and did it and the teacher worked at her desk. That's what we're going to do today. We're going to work, because that's what it is involved in making change. That's what we'll do with most of our time. I will say two things, and then we'll work. Most books that you would pick up about change tend to focus on the taking of steps. They want you to do something. They want you to fill out some blanks and make lines on charts and things like that. And they do that because they know that that's the part that you need to work on. But I would tend to differ with how they approach it. And so I just want to point that out before we go. Most people, I think, and I do it too, but I just don't think it's true. Most people would say that if this is my vision, Z, I need to start at A and move to B and move to C and move to D, and so on and so on, and then I'll get to Z. Take one step at a time, put one foot in front of the other, and make your plan and do it. And I would say that, at least for my life, that's not the way I experience it. And I would hold up that maybe that might be true for you as well. That we may have our vision, and we need to have it in order to start moving. And we start out with the first step, of course, and we go to A, and we go to B, and then we go to C, and then we think, well, here's a different one, and we go to D, and then maybe we go back up here and we repeat B a little differently. We go to B1, and then we go to C, and then we go to D, and we go to E, and then maybe we go to C3. And then we finally get over here to Z1. We probably don't end up at Z, really. We end up at a modification of the vision. And the reason I say that is that we are talking about lifestyle patterns. Patterns are those actions that we repeat in our lives, that they are fundamental in our lives. They're common themes. So we repeat them. They're familiar. We do them over again. And we do modify them, but they still are patterns. And that when we change, because change is dynamic, it isn't that we just change something in our lives. That something in our lives then comes back and changes us. We become different. We're not only trying to transform our lives, our life is transforming us. And we need to not hold our patterns and our vision so rigidly that we don't allow for the transformations that are going to occur, that are going to end us up at a different place, but just as empowering and just as visionary as where we thought we started. Lorda Scott Maxwell says this in a different way in her Measure of My Days. She says, I often want to say to people, you have neat, tight expectations of what life ought to give you, but you won't get it. That isn't what life does. Life doesn't accommodate you. It shatters you. It is meant to. it couldn't do better. Every seed destroys its container, or else there would be no fruition. But some won't hear, and some would shatter themselves instead. Change changes us, too. Give you an example that you probably even know people like this who have had heart attacks or ulcers or some physical disability interrupt their heavy working life. And they say to themselves, I want better health, I can't live like this, I'll decrease my workload, that's what gave me the ulcer in the first place. And I'll spend more time in non-work activity. And so they start to spend more time with their families, or they spend time in a garden, or they start to walk, and their ulcer clears up, and they've changed a life pattern. Well, my guess is they've changed too. They're not going to be the same people you knew when they were overworked. They're going to be people now who don't expect themselves to always get things done. They're going to be people now who will become more interdependent and less independent. They're going to be people who are more social, more friendly than they were before. They're going to be people who may value kindness instead of efficiency. They're going to be different. We are going to be different when we start to make change. Okay, I guess that's all I really want to say about that. But I do want us to work for the rest of the time. And that means that you're going to have to get yourself prepared to work. If you're going to sit down and do anything about your life, you might as well be real deliberate about it. So that means you need to find a thing to write on, because you're going to be writing for about 10 minutes. Those of you that don't want to do this, let me leave. Anyone who would like to do this can take a piece of paper and work on it. But I want you to get comfortable. If you need a refill of coffee or tea, go get it. Get yourselves cozy. Give you a minute to get settled in the way you need to in order to write well.
You have to find a place to stop when you're knitting too.
What?
You have to find a place to stop when you're knitting
too. Yes, and find a place to stop when you're knitting.
Can't stop.
Perish the thought. What I'd like you to do is, there's two sides to this piece of paper that you're going to be working on, to just basically look at the front page and just look at it. I'll explain it, but you might as well just have your fill of looking at it for a while. Beth, do you want one? Just look at it. Read it.
Are there two communities?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yep, I'll explain that in a second. Just want you to look at it. Okay. What this is a chart is could be called a chart of your visions. What I did was I identified those areas of our lives that we make change in across the top. We make changes in ourselves, in our personal patterns. We can have visions about how we want our family to be. We can have visions about our community. And I listed it. We have many communities that we belong to. I made a couple of columns for community because we belong to neighborhood communities and churches and schools and Holden. Those are many communities that we belong to, and so I just indicated, put two there to indicate that there is more than one community of which we're a member. I also wrote down our nation, that is the United States. We can have visions for how we want the United States to be. The same with the world, how we wish the world there, and by world I mean the socio-political world. And then the earth. And then by that I mean the physical planet. We can have visions for how we want or wish the physical planet to be. Now there's more categories, but I tried to go, you know, obviously from the smallest, most personal, to the largest, okay? We could put universe in there.
Maybe
Molly. Yeah. Would you like these charts? We're going to start work on some filling out. And then down the vertical column, I indicated times. We can have visions way in the future for any of those categories. And we can have visions that are closer to now. And we can even have a vision about today. We can have an imagined picture. An imagined picture of reality's positive potential. We can hold on to that. We can create that. What I want you to do is select one of the columns, the vertical columns, and fill that out today. Let me give you an example of the category of myself, that column. When I'm talking about patterns, we're talking about lifestyle patterns that could be changed, I wrote down some that might just be true for you or for any of us. We may want to change our levels of consumption. And we could create visions about how we would be. What would we be like 20 years from now if we had changed our levels of consumption in the way we want to go? What would we look like 20 years from now if we did that? 2 years from now? Next week? Okay? Or we may want to change. Maybe we want to understand a personal habit of ours and change it. Maybe we want to look at our eating patterns. Understand why we eat the way we do, what our relationship is to food, and maybe we want to change that in some way. Or maybe we want to develop a particular kind of relationship we don't have right now. Maybe we want to have an intimate kind of relationship with someone and we don't have it, but we know we want it and we can picture what that would look like. Or perhaps we want to change or create some level of political involvement for ourselves. The same way we can envision what would we look like if we were doing that, what we want to do politically. Perhaps we want to establish ourselves in a career, a particular vocation. Can we make a picture of that? Or maybe we want to change where we live, our actual location. What would that look like? What would that place look like? What would we be like in that place? Or what about children? Do we want to have children? What is our relationship to children going to be? I mean, those are just all kinds of patterns and roles that make up lifestyle, and I just picked out some, but you can see what I'm trying to say about that particular category. We could do that with every category. So what I want you to do is to think about this in one of two ways. Either think about a change that you know you are about to embark on. What category does it fall into? And I want you to start with that category, and I want you to envision as far into the future as you can with that. That's where I want you to start. So if you can think 20 years from now, that's where you start. I want you to close your eyes, picture what that would look like. How would you be? Where would you be? Who would be around? What would be the photograph of that? And when you have that in your mind, write down the keywords in that category and then look at the time period one block closer. Close your eyes, picture it in 10 years. What would that be like? Write down the keywords. Take the 5 years and so on. But start from the furthest out, you can go with that particular vision. Work your way up. If you don't have a particular change you're embarking on, but know you would like to make a change, or know that you have, you're coming out of that third, I want the world to be different, and you know that that involves the United States, or you know that involves the world, or some other particular larger areas besides you, then start there and envision that, and start as far in the future as you can, and then work your way back. Okay? I'm going to give us 10 minutes to do that, and it may take us longer, but we'll see. If you have difficulty, try as hard as you can to just grab a hold of what's visual, if you can, in that, or what you sense about that time. And it's not a to-do list at all. It's an album of photos when you're done. Okay?
Judy?
Yes?
We're just supposed to pick the category myself, our personal change that we're embarking on, or any one of you?
Any one of those categories that has the most meaning to you right now. Is that clear? Sandy?
So the way to get started is to think of some change or something. And how you envision yourself ideally with that?
Yeah.
Wherever it falls.
Wherever it falls. And that, wherever it falls the furthest in the future. And start there and then work back category by category. Or year, you know, time period by time period.
And write how that pattern
right.
works in our life?
No, write more of a description of that time period, of what that time period would look like. If you were imagining yourself 10 years from now, having made a particular change, what would you look like? Who would be around you? Where would you be? You might be writing time, place, words of description. Or the same with the United States. What would the United States look like? What would it be doing? What would it be, you know, whatever it comes to. Okay? Begin. There's no correct answer to any of this. But this is it. This is the hard work, folks.
Hard to think 20 years.
I know. Close your eyes. Let yourself daydream. Look at the ceiling. It's all in this together, you know. Right now, what flows out of you to do. I don't want you to spend a lot of time kind of cranking it out, but just what flows out of you to do, write it down. If you think of two things, fine. If you think of seven things, fine. If you think of 10 things and they flow out, fine. If you think of 12, stop at 10. I mean, just what flows. Write them real fast. That's when you're finished with your first side, with your first column, one column. If you're not entirely finished with the one column and then the back page, you may want to take some time to do this another time. You know, it would be fun to be able to do it in reverse, too, to say, pick yourself 5 years from now and then go across. Who would you be? What would your family be like? What would your community be like? What would the U.S. be like? And so on, and do it the other way. Dreams, I don't think, get fulfilled unless we share them. I think we can dream and dream and dream in our minds. But until we start saying the words out loud and share them with somebody else, they don't get clear. They don't start to have some concrete foundation to them. And so I'd like you to share them. I'm sorry I didn't tell you that before you started to write. I should have done that. However, I'd like you to be able to share as much as you could about your dream with someone else who's done the activity. I'd like you to do that in pairs. And since I didn't tell you ahead of time, I'd like you to share what you feel comfortable sharing. But the purpose of the activity would be for you to describe your vision, your dream, in as best a way you can in order to have that person begin to picture at all what you're talking about. Give them a picture, as if you were handing them a snapshot. Here this is 20 years from now. This is what it would look like. That's the kind of talking I want you to do. I know people are starting to come in, and so that's kind of a problem. But I'd still like you to give it a crack, okay? So if you could find some, there should, who, as I counted, there were 15 of you who did it, okay? So would you three in the back, Molly, Corinne, and Beth, get together in a trio, and then the rest of you pair up? You just turn to each other. Dan is one, so he could join. And Karen, would you join somebody? Do this pairing very quickly, please. Find a partner. Yeah, but why don't you two not share together, okay? Since you are share probably a lot of that already. And here's how I would like you to do it. Have one person go at a time. And we can't take too long because we're running late. But if you would start, the first person as a speaker, start at the furthest point in the future that you've created your dream. And like I said, describe that as if it's a snapshot. Where are you going? Are you two together, Sandy and? Oh, you want to share it all? Okay. Strut, go as far into the future as you can with that, and then describe it as if you're describing a snapshot. You're holding up to someone. This is my little album here about here what it is. The other person's job is to just listen to that and absolutely, absolutely offer no critique at all about it. Whether you think it's possible, whether you think it's correct, or anything. All you're there to do is hear about it. So you can say, tell me more. That's interesting. Keep telling me. But no critique. This is somebody else's picture of their future. And then when that person is done, the other person do it. You're just hearing each other's thoughts and dreams. Okay? And I don't want you to what I ideally like you to do is to go down the whole time period and then flip your page over and talk about what you do, but we don't have the time to do that. So if you would just take your furthest time out and embellish it and let people hear about it, that would be great. Okay? So begin. I mean that about dreams aren't really, I don't think, able to be fulfilled unless we share them. I know we need to find ways in which to do that that feel safe and helpful to us. But I would say that if you may realize that there are times when you have thoughts spinning in your head, and then when you start to express them out loud, they take a whole different shape than what they were in your head. And I think that that means that saying them and hearing them and sending them out into the universe create something new, and they transform, and so do you. And so to share them with other people, I think, is the best way to get moving. And I hope that the exercise was helpful, at least in getting you to play around with some dreams. I would have loved to have heard everybody's. I would like to suggest a few books to you if you're trying to make some concrete change. They're in the library and in the bookstore. One by David Campbell is, if you don't know where you're going, you'll probably end up somewhere else. The same idea, you need to have a vision and then create a plan. Alan Lakin has written a book, How to Get Control of Time in Your Life. This is for people who want to be very efficient but don't know how to prioritize their lives. In order to do that. He uses the example of middle-class businessmen all the time, but if you can get past that, he's got some good ideas about how to prioritize. Wayne Oates has written a book, Your Right to Rest, and it's kind of the opposite of the one I just talked about. It's you're taking time to relax and have leisure and to not push yourself all the time, and that efficiency is not of the highest value. Above all else. Elizabeth O'Connor's book, Eighth Day of Creation, Discovering Your Gifts and Using Them. That's the book that motivated Mary Schramm to make some changes in her lives, and then Mary wrote her own book, Gifts of Grace, Discovering and Using Your Unique Abilities. We have two books by John Crystal and Richard Bowles. These are real systematic books for how to find a job, identifying the job you want and how to go get it. And they are real how-to type books. So if that's the next step you're on, you might want to look at this one. This book, I think, would delight all of you if you had the time to read it. It's fiction by Dorothy Bryant. The Key of Nevada Are Waiting for You. It's a book about dreaming. Dreams. It's in the library. The kin of Ada live only for their dream. Their work, their art, their love are designed in and by their dreams. And as a culture, they dream together. Their only aim is to dream higher dreams. And into this world comes a desperate man like us, who is first subdued and then led on a spiritual journey that sooner or later all of us must make. It's really a wonderful book. Kin of Ada Are Waiting for You. And I'll close the sessions with two quotes, one by Robert McAvee Brown. He says, being a pilgrim people, uprooted, on journey, in via, lest fixed, creatively dislocated, is part of the movement of grace. And then a paraphrase of Jan Bodine, knowledge of the need for change is not the hope. A vision of the change is not the hope. Stepping toward the change is not the hope. All these together are the hope.